So today's feast, the Feast of Christ the King, is filled with multiple ironies. First, there's the irony implicit in this gospel text. The only time in the gospel where Jesus is referred to as king is when he's being executed. Are you the king of the Jews? And that's inscription over his dead body. This is the king of the Jews. The Romans did that truly to stick their thumb in the eyes of the Jews. So this is your king. But in a certain sense, they had it right in this way. This is a recent feast, and its origin is a fairly cynical one, I think. The feast was created shortly after the papacy had lost the papal states, namely enormous tracts of land in Italy. And so they were trying to put their eye in the face of the Risorgimento people. And see, we're still in charge here, so we got Christ the King. I mean, you got all the real estate back, but we still got Christ the King. And of course, they're both wrong. Because what the feast does is subvert or invert, as the scriptures so often do, every normal understanding of what kingship is about. That is, if you want a metaphor for Jesus as king, there are a couple I would suggest. One is this dead body on a cross. That's the kingship. Or if you want to see the kingship exercised, then you see Jesus kneeling and washing his disciples' feet. That's kingship, full stop. And that's why this is a kind of oxymoronic character. And it helps, I think, to fill out that picture, to go back into the biblical narrative, where the notion of the kingdom of God is fairly constant. What does it mean to talk about the kingdom of God? It certainly is not like this thing from Colossians, where you get this kind of cosmic Christ business, which has its place, but is not Pauline, of course. Paul didn't write this, and Paul didn't think of Jesus in those terms. The kingdom of God is not an institution or a structure at all. It's a state of being. It comes into being when the transformative power of God has worked its effect in our lives. Full stop. When we overcome our fear and our guilt and our shame and our defensiveness and our violence, all of this forms this witch's brew of motivation for us human beings, where we come to the point where we can stand, in the words of Genesis, naked and unashamed with each other. When that happens, when we are transformed into that condition, that's the kingdom of God. Not somebody sitting on a throne, you know, giving orders. The kingdom of God is a dynamic reality. It is certainly not a structure. And it's within that context that we can understand the kingship of Christ. Huh? Who is this man, Jesus? You know, there's a window at Brescia which drives me crazy, because I have, every time I go for Mass and sit and pray for a while, it's directly across from me, and it shows this Jesus triumphant with a crown on his head, wearing vestments, ready for Mass, and looking in total control of things. You know, that's visual heresy, folks. It really is. I mean, it's totally misleading. And the problem is, of course, that we can appropriate that image in a kind of unconverted frame of mind. Say, yeah, that's our boy. He's winning. We're on top. But that's not it at all. Unless that whole conversion, that whole subversion, inversion takes place. Where, to borrow a phrase from Nietzsche of all people, we transvalue all values. But we come to see a radically different pattern of relationship between us human beings. We're not going to understand this. I mean, when we say king, it's very simple what we mean. You know, we mean the power to be bossed, order people around to get what we want done by somebody else under duress. That's drastically different. The genius of Jesus, so far as I can, after all these years thinking about this, praying over this, trying to find it in the real world, which is very hard to do, as you all know, is that he let people be. You know? And even here in this passage from Luke, and this is probably not historical, but that's all right. It's Luke understanding very much what Jesus was about. He was about forgiving. He was about letting this crook, aware of his own guilt, and seeking to move beyond it. He gave him the room to move beyond it. Gave him space. Gave him breathing room to be. And that's why I take a considerable work of imagination. Because it's great fun, you know, to walk behind Jesus wearing a crown and carrying on the seat with a whole bunch of hefty Swiss guards dragging him around through the Vatican, for example. You know, that gives me a certain oomph, I suppose. We must be right if we have all that glory on our side. No. That's all rubbish. That's all rubbish. It's totally misdirected, totally misleading. It's only when we begin this profound, extraordinary conversion of the imagination to think that the God, the master of the universe, making himself, herself, themselves, available to all of us in an absolutely non-threatening fashion. If we can get our heads around that, then we're in a fair way to understand what the Feast of Christ the King is really all about. But unless we get our heads around that, we're going to make a misstep again. We're going to fall back into that sick pathology of the church which we've suffered from for so long, triumphalism. We're winning. We're on top. We're number one. That's rubbish. That's total rubbish.